What's up, you guys? I'm Haley.
And I'm Andrea.
And this is Inhuman, a true crime podcast. And I am just realizing that my coffee is sitting in our little baby jail because I was sitting in there with my son earlier and I was like, where's my coffee? It's still sitting in baby jail. So
do you want to go grab it?
It's okay.
Okay.
Today I have a disappearance case for you. But before we get into today's case, I have two other case updates that I wanted to share from recent cases. And so... Okay. And they're both like positive updates. So we like
That's awesome. We love to hear that.
Yeah. So the first one is from last week's episode, actually, the recently solved murder of Yvonne Mankey. And at the time that we recorded last week, there hadn't been any updates about the killer, Mary Josephine Bailey, since December 2023. So it was basically like she had been arrested and she was in jail, but we didn't know like what was going on. But she actually had a hearing this week on Monday, and her arraignment has been scheduled for February 28th. So she hasn't entered a plea yet. It will likely come at the arraignment, but she is, things are moving. And shout out to one of our listeners who messaged me on Instagram about this update because she lives in the area and she sent me like a public records website with the information. Because
If
you Google Mary Josephine Bailey, like nothing comes up.
Yeah.
But no updates come up, but I was able to find the information through that website that one of our listeners sent. So shout out to you for sending that. But yeah, it's good to see that things are moving along.
Yeah, because it was like, oh yay, finally. But then it was like, oh well, nothing's really happened. So
yeah,
still feels very open ended, but definitely moving in the right direction.
But it's moving.
We love that.
Yep. Yeah. And then the second update is about episode 270, the murder of Caitlin Arquette. And when we left off in the episode, the man who had murdered Kate and two other women had been arrested in July 2021 on a probation violation. And then he ended up confessing to all three murders. And he was like not really on the radar of investigators for Kate's murder. Her mom, Lois Duncan, had suspected him because he was actually the first person on the scene. But investigators had basically said, like, well, he just saw it and pulled over and they talked to him and didn't have any reason to suspect him. So he was like not considered a suspect. But he ended up being arrested on that probation violation and he confessed to the murders of Kate along with 13-year-old Stella Gonzalez and 21-year-old Althea Oakley.
Wow.
Yeah. And when we recorded the episode, his attorney had recently tried to get his confession thrown out, but the judge said, no, your confession will not be thrown out. But he wasn't pleading guilty, and he was scheduled to go to trial at some point this year. But in January 2024, in case you're listening to this, like next year or something.
In the future.
Yeah. He ended up pleading guilty to the 5 murder and rape charges that he was facing.
Damn.
So he pleaded guilty to everything, and he was sentenced to 62 years in prison and will be required to serve a minimum of 45 years. And he's currently 55 years old, so in 45 years, he'll be 100. He's not getting out.
Yeah.
The district attorney, Sam Bregman, said, quote, he will spend the rest of his life in prison where he can't hurt anyone else. We hope this brings some sense of closure to the families of the victims who have waited so long for justice.
That's so fucking heartbreaking. Gosh.
I know. He just got to live his life for so many years.
Yeah, because that case happened in like the late 80s or like mid 80s. I'm like.
Yep. 1989.
Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah, it had been 32 years.
Wow.
So
insane. I'm so glad that he confessed.
I know. And Carrie Arquette, Caitlin's sister, said after the sentencing, I want Apodaca to go to sleep every single night thinking about my little sister in a graveyard rotting beneath a stone that speaks to our family's love and loss.
That's powerful. I got goosebumps.
And at the hearing, Apodaca, who, of course, they always have the opportunity to say something, so he did, and he told the families of the victims that he, quote, has cried rivers of tears for his victims.
Shut the fuck up. Literally.
I had the exact same reaction. If you're
going to say that, don't say it like that. River, that just sounds so manipulative.
So disgusting.
It's just, like, no, like, you feel sorry for me. I killed your daughter and your sister, but, you know, feel sorry for me because I've been just distraught over it.
Yeah. Like, no. You killed three people and then went years without being caught and not having to pay for what you did. Like, no.
Yeah.
And finally, the Albuquerque police chief, Harold Medina, who also actually knew Althea's family and was the one who told them that he had been arrested, said, quote, these heinous crimes haunted three families for more than 30 years, leaving behind a wake of pain and suffering. Mm-hmm. I hope all the families can now move forward and find closure in a long-awaited resolution to their nightmare.
Gosh.
So the good thing is with this plea deal, the families won't have to like endure a trial or, you know, go through any of that. And he will be spending the rest of his life in prison. He didn't get like a lighter sentence or anything. So
good.
Thankfully, that case is finally concluded. And, you know, it obviously doesn't make anything any easier for the families, but at least now they have answers and they can kind of close that chapter without having to think about like going to trial or going to parole hearings or anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, absolutely nothing will ever bring their loved ones back or give them that true sense of peace, but at least they know who did it. And that, because the just the question hanging over your head every day, like that is just mind numbing, you know?
Unimaginable.
Yeah, truly.
So yeah, that is two little case updates for some of our previous cases. And today, like I said, we're covering a disappearance and it's a very bizarre one and it's unsolved and I really don't know what to think about it. So okay. Let's just get into it.
Sounds good.
Leah Roberts had been through a lot. Her parents had both passed away and she had survived serious injuries from a car accident.
Oh my gosh.
She dropped out of college and spent her days writing poetry. But when she left home in March 2000, she left money for her housemate to cover expenses while she was away, indicating that she was planning to return. 9 days later, her car would be found at the bottom of an embankment across the country, and to this day, she remains missing.
What?
Yeah. So Leah Toby Roberts was born on July 23rd, 1976, in Durham, North Carolina. And her parents, Nancy and Stancil Roberts, had three children, and she was the youngest. So Leah and her older sister, Kara, and her older brother, Heath, lived a relatively normal childhood by all accounts. Unfortunately, when Leah was 17 years old, right before she was set to begin studying at North Carolina State University, her father was diagnosed with a chronic lung illness. And so that really put a lot of stress on the family. Yeah. But North Carolina State was not far from Durham, just about 25 miles. So Leah went to school and, you know, was going to keep studying. She was studying Spanish and anthropology, but she also did continue to feel the strain of her father's illness on her family.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially if he was, you know, the main source of income for the family. I mean, that puts mm-hmm. stress on everybody. And just, you know, having it be your parent, I mean, that's...
Yeah, seeing your father go through that.
Yeah.
2 years later, tragedy struck again when Leah's mother suddenly and unexpectedly died from heart disease.
Oh my gosh. Jeez.
Yeah. So at this time, Leah took some time off school, and then she returned to the university in the fall of 1998 at 21 years old. But then tragedy struck yet again, and Leah was involved in a serious car accident that left her with some really nasty injuries. So she had a shattered femur that required surgery and a metal rod to heal.
That sounds really painful. That's like the biggest bone in your body. Jeez.
Yeah. And then on top of that, she also had a punctured lung. So these were some really like pretty serious injuries. And it was a near-death experience. The car accident was pretty serious. And she later told her sister, Kara, that when she saw the truck that she hit, basically a truck like pulled out in front of her and she couldn't stop in time. Oh, she was sure that she was about to die.
Oh my gosh. That's so scary.
And after her recovery, she felt like she was born again and had a second chance at life. So she decided that she wanted to take some more time off school and kind of live life to the fullest. And she decided that she was going to participate in a field program in Costa Rica in the spring of 1999.
That's cool.
So she loved to travel. She had studied for a semester in Spain. And like I said, she was studying Spanish. So she was really excited to participate in this field program in Costa Rica. 3 weeks before she was set to leave for the program, though, her father passed away from his chronic illness. But she didn't want to let anything hold her back, and she decided she was still going to go on the trip, which I commend her for, because, yeah, you know, as much as it's sad that her father passed away, I'm sure he would have wanted her to, like, continue to live her best life. And so
staying home is not going to bring him back, sadly, you know? So you have to just...
Yeah.
And it keeps your mind off of it to some degree, you know, just living your life. Like,
yeah,
she wanted to live her life to the fullest.
Exactly. But a friend who visited her on the trip said that she was worried about Leah because, quote, she did not seem to be affected at all about her father's death. Which I understand, but I also feel like, you know, first of all, this was a chronic illness, so I'm sure she, like, knew to some extent that this was coming. And, you know, yeah, that maybe that was just her way of grieving, to, like, almost avoid it. And
that's an unfair, you know, assessment coming from somebody. I mean, I'm sure they were close friends, whatever, but, like, to say that, I don't know, that just seems unfair.
Yeah, I don't think she
meant it, like, ill will. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think she meant anything bad by it. She was just saying she was kind of worried about her.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, because, you know, she's been probably mourning his loss for years.
Yeah, ever since he was diagnosed.
Yeah.
But Leah was making the most of the time she spent in Costa Rica. According to an episode of Disappeared, she was living her life with a new worldview, and she basically was starting to reject the idea that she had to live life like everyone else did. She was kind of like, I can live the life that I want to live.
Yeah.
Also of note, and this will seem random, but it will be important later, because she was leaving the country and she wanted to plan in case of an emergency, but both of her parents were now no longer alive, she granted power of attorney over her bank accounts and, like, finances to her sister, Kara.
Okay, that's understandable.
So just keep that in the back of your mind for later.
Okay.
Later in 1999, after she completed the program and returned to North Carolina, she was almost done with her Spanish and anthology degrees, like 3 months away from graduation, and she decided to drop out of school.
No.
So both of her siblings tried to persuade her to just, like, stick it out. They were like, you're so close. But she refused. She had made up her mind. She was like, no, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to live my life. And that's understandable, too.
Yeah.
So she dropped out of school and she started taking up hobbies that made her happy. She learned to play guitar. She took up photography, and she liked to hang out at a local coffee house called Cupo Joe. And she loved writing poetry. And while spending time at the coffee shop, she met a friend named Janine, and they were obsessed with the author Jack Kerouac. So they were always talking about Kerouac's writing and books, and they also kind of started talking about going on a road trip to the West Coast to live the life of Kerouac. So they didn't have any set plans, but they were looking forward to making the trip.
Okay. Now, is this author, is he like a fictional author, like dark?
I will talk about him in a minute.
Okay. Because I feel like that's probably telling to some degree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, we'll talk about him in a minute.
Okay.
Leah also adopted a kitten that she named Bee, and she was just, like, living life. She actually had gotten an inheritance after her father passed away, so that allowed her to live for a little while without working, and she kind of figured out what she wanted to do with life.
Okay. I mean, that's fair.
Yeah. On March 9th, 2000, Leah spoke with her sister, Kara, on the phone about getting together soon. And while they didn't have a set plan or, like, a set date, Kara later recalled that it seemed like there was no question they would be seeing each other soon. Leah and her roommate Nicole planned to do some babysitting the next day, and they talked about that on the 9th. And Nicole went to work, And when she came home, Leah's 1993 Jeep Cherokee wasn't there. But that wasn't odd because Leah wasn't working, so she was always coming and going from their house. And Nicole said that there would be times where they wouldn't see each other for a couple days just because their schedules were, like, conflicting.
I get that. I feel like I've had roommates like that.
Yeah. And Leah wasn't home that night when Nicole went to bed, but she wasn't too concerned. But then the next day, Leah never showed up for the babysitting job that they had agreed to do together. So Nicole was like, that's kind of weird, starting to get a little bit worried, but also wasn't like too concerned yet because, again, Leah was kind of like this free spirit and she would go and do her own thing and it wouldn't be abnormal to go a few days without seeing each other. So she was like, you know, maybe I'll see her tomorrow.
Okay.
But by the evening of March 11th, Nicole knew something was up because friends and family who had plans with Leah or had been trying to contact her were calling their house to look for her. And Nicole hadn't seen or heard from her, and neither had her sister, Kara.
Don't love that.
On March 12th, Nicole called Kara around noon, and they spent the next 24 hours basically calling everyone who knew Leah to see if anyone had heard from her or had seen her.
Okay.
But they had no luck. No one knew where Leah was. So on the morning of March, on the morning of Monday, March 13th, 3 full days after Leah was last seen, Kara and Nicole reported Leah missing to the Durham police. With still no sign of Leah and not being able to reach her, Kara and Nicole went into her bedroom at the house to see if they could find, you know, any indication of where she might be. First of all, they found a note in the room, and this note had some things that made sense, but also some things that were kind of, like, ominous. First of all, the note read, "I'm not suicidal, I'm the opposite. Remember Jack Kerouac." So that made them kind of think like, okay, maybe she wanted to live the life of this author, which again, I'll talk about him in a minute.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was like indicative that she was planning to return. And with the money, it said, "While I am gone, remember, everyone is together in thoughts and prayers and time passes quickly. Have faith in me, yourself, everyone." So, like, again, it sounds like she's, like, planning to return. And she also offered her room and laptop to others while she was gone. She said that there were cookies in the freezer. She said, told Nicole to give everyone her love and tell Kara not to worry.
Mm.
And then she also explained in the note that she had no choice. So again, it just seems like she purposefully left and was planning to come back.
Yeah.
There was another odd thing in the note. On it was a drawing of the Cheshire Cat's grin. Now, Kara said that Leah loved Alice in Wonderland, and she believed that the drawing was, quote, meant to convey her intent to spontaneously disappear and eventually reappear, just like the Cheshire Cat comes and goes mysteriously.
That's fair. I like that, that theory.
Like the little symbolism with it.
Yeah. And I used to like just randomly doodle that same, like the smile, the Cheshire Cat smile. So
I love it.
I mean, if it was like way out of her character, I'd be like, wow, you know, like.
Yeah. No, but it didn't seem super, super like unlike her.
Right.
Kara and Nicole also noticed that several of Leah's clothes were missing, like a good chunk of her like clothes and belongings. So that suggested that she had packed
like
and was planning. Yeah, exactly. Since she had been planning to leave purposefully.
Right.
Her cat B was also missing, indicating that she had taken her with her.
Aw, okay.
So by all accounts, it seemed like Leah had left on her own accord, but that she was planning to come back.
I wonder why, though, if she was planning to take this journey with her friend, why did she go without her?
So they had, like, just vaguely talked about going together.
Okay.
And they were friends, but they weren't, like, super good friends. So I think that it kind of, just, like, seems like, you know, she just made this decision that spontaneously that she wanted to go.
Okay.
Now, thankfully, Kara still had power of attorney over Leah's bank accounts. from when she went to Costa Rica. Oh. So she was able to look at her financial records, her like credit card purchases, her bank account to see if she could tell where she was.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So Kara found that Leah had withdrawn several thousand dollars on the afternoon of the 9th, the last day that she was seen. Then Leah's debit card was used to pay for a motel in Memphis, Tennessee, and then was also used to purchase gas and food along I-40 and then I-5 when she reached the end of I-40 in California. So this route indicated that she had been traveling west, and she made it to Oregon in 3 days from North Carolina. So she was like hauling.
Looking at not taking any breaks, which is, I don't know, for me is alarming. So I'm like, are you okay? Are you driving safe?
Like through the night? Yeah.
Yeah. Are you like, how are you staying awake? Are you like punishing energy drinks and caffeine pills or something?
Yeah. Who knows? Yeah. But the last purchase made on Leah's card was just after midnight on March 13th, which was the day that she was like officially reported missing. And this purchase was at a gas station in Brooks, Oregon. And there's actually security footage from that gas station. And there's a screenshot of that footage that I'll share. But everything seems normal. Leah doesn't look distressed or injured. She was seen peering outside several times throughout the course of like the footage while she was making her purchase, but you can't see what she was looking at because there were no cameras in the parking lot.
Okay, so just casually looking, not like paranoid.
No, not like super paranoid, but definitely like peering more than just like, you know, briefly looking outside. She was like, it seemed like she was looking at something, but it wasn't like a super paranoid, like, you know, distraught type of looking.
Okay.
Like, I wouldn't be surprised if she was just like looking to check on her car or, you know, like I do something
maybe
like that.
Maybe she saw a dog.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it could have really been anything, but people do point to that of like maybe there was somebody with her or something like that.
Or following her. That's what I thought. But
yeah,
I mean, and
it could have been. But yeah, we don't know. And after that, there were no transactions on any of Leah's cards and no more money was withdrawn from her accounts. But remember, she had withdrawn several thousand dollars, so she did have cash with her.
Okay.
Kara was determined to find where her sister was, where she was going, and what her plans were. So she went and explored several of the coffee shops that Leah had been frequenting in the last couple of months before her disappearance. And at Cup o' Joe, she met Janine, the friend of Leah's, who also loved the author Jack Kerouac. And according to Unsolved Mysteries, quote, Leah found comfort in the writings of Jack Kerouac, the Beat Generation author who wrote about the free-spirited road trips he took across America. Mm-hmm. Leah's favorite was called The Durham Bums, and it's a short story that encourages the reader to leave behind the materialism of modern life. Part of that book takes place at a forest fire lookout on Desolation Peak near Mount Baker in Washington State.
Interesting.
So that would kind of explain this trip that she spontaneously wanted to take. And Janine told Kara that Leah had expressed wanting to see that area for herself. So Janine said, quote, from the last conversation that we had, we were talking about Dharma bums. Did I say Durham bums earlier? I might have said Durham bums. It's Dharma bums.
No, yeah, I think you did say Durham because I remember hearing
Durham, North Carolina. Yeah. Looks
very
similar to Dharma.
Words. Yeah.
But Dharma bums. So she said, we were talking about Dharma bums and about how Kerouac was up on Desolation Peak in Washington, just taking in all the beauty around him.
Okay.
And Janine would also later say, quote, I totally knew that she was going to take off and go to the mountains because she wanted to go where Jack Kerouac had gone. She wanted to go to the road. She wanted to go on the road and be a free spirit, figure herself out. So again, this kind of explains it all and also was kind of a relief for Kara because she was like, okay, Leah had a plan.
I have an answer.
She didn't just,
yeah,
exactly. She wanted to go see the mountains. She wanted to go see Desolation Peak. So she spontaneously decided to take off and go see. But by everything that they saw, it seemed like she was planning to come back.
Yeah, that's the part.
Yeah. And so Kara was just hopeful that eventually Leah would contact her. On March 18th, 2000, it was Kara's 26th birthday. And she was sure that she would call her to wish her a happy birthday. But unfortunately, that never happened. And instead, Kara got a call from the Durham County Sheriff's Office. The deputy told her to call the police in Bellingham, Washington, because there was an update related to her sister. It was the early morning of March 18th when a couple was jogging along a road in Mount Baker Snoqualmie National Forest. They were running along Canyon Creek Road, a road that led to some isolated residences and logging camps in the National Forest, and this was not far from the U.S.-Canada border. As the couple were out for their morning jog, they started noticing random articles of clothing on the side of the road, and some of it was on the ground, but some was, like, tied in tree branches along the road. Then, as they followed the clothing path, they noticed that a car was crashed at the bottom of a steep embankment. When Kara called the Whatcom County Sheriff's Office, they informed her that Leah's 1993 Jeep Wrangler had been found earlier that day in a remote forest, crashed at the bottom of an embankment. But while Leah's car had been found, she was nowhere to be seen.
And was there any sign of, like, blood or anything we'll get like that? Okay. I have so many questions.
So the car itself was severely damaged because it had basically gone down a steep slope through trees and crashed at the bottom. Based on the damage to the Jeep and the trees surrounding it, it was determined that the car had been traveling at 40 miles an hour when it went off the road.
Okay, which was...
And everything inside the car had been tossed around, which was, again, consistent with, like, a multiple rollover crash.
Okay.
So Sergeant Kevin McFadden said, quote, "With the speed that the vehicle was traveling and the amount of damage to the vehicle, you would anticipate some type of injury to the person inside. At least some type of evidence to indicate contact damage that the person inside had, that the person had been inside the vehicle." But inside the car, there was no sign of blood or any other injury.
Okay, so was there, like, a rock in the floorboard, like a boulder? Not a boulder, but, like, that's way too big, but something that would have held the gas pedal down?
Nope, and there were no other signs of, like, shatter marks in the glass as if somebody had slammed into it. The seat belts weren't stretched. So to investigators, it seemed that no one had been inside the car when it crashed, indicating that this was either staged or planned to look like someone had driven off the road.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
However, bizarrely, blankets and pillows were inside the Jeep, basically hung up over the, like, broken windows, indicating that it had been used as a shelter after the crash. Several of Leah's belongings were found scattered around the woods outside of the crash site, and this included her passport, driver's license, her checkbook, clothes, a guitar, her CDs. They also found cat food and a small cat carrier. And there was the $2,500 in cash, so, you know, $500 less than the $3,000 that she had withdrawn, and other valuables like jewelry left behind. So it didn't look like somebody had, like, come and robbed the car.
Yeah, I'm so confused. Because, like, if she, like, okay, so maybe she wrecked her car on accident or on purpose or I don't know. You said it was a Jeep Wrangler?
Mm-hmm.
So it could have been a manual six shift. So maybe it went out of gear and plummeted.
Could have been.
And then she'd just been, like, camping out in it, because it sounds like she was trying to live like this dude and he, like, was all about living off grid and but where is she and why'd she leave her freaking money behind?
All of her valuables.
Crazy.
Very bizarre. So after the discovery of Leah's car, Kara and her brother Heath traveled to Bellingham, Washington to help in the investigation. So they still hadn't heard from their sister, and they were extremely concerned for her safety, given the state of the car and the fact that all of her belongings were left behind. At the time, Heath told WRAL News, quote, "My worst fear is she's not okay. Obviously, that's a possibility and something we'd rather not consider, but we feel our best chance of finding out if she's all right is getting help from the public."
Yeah.
So they were asking for anybody with any information, and they were also looking through all of Leah's belongings from the crash site. and they found a box of mementos from the road trip that she had been taking. This included a movie ticket stub from Bellingham, Washington, which was like the main town not far from the crash site. Right. And this was a ticket stub for March 13th. And so that indicated that she had made it there and she had purchased this ticket stub to go see a movie. So to Kara, Heath, and investigators, this suggested that she had driven the 5 to 6 hours straight from where she last stopped in Oregon, and she had made it to Bellingham and then spent a couple of hours in Bellingham before the movie. And so because of this, they started, you know, looking around, and there was one sit-down restaurant there, so they figured she probably ate there. So they went and started talking to patrons of the restaurant, and they were able to talk to two men who had eaten at that restaurant on the 13th who had seen and spoken with Leah. So they told, these two men both told investigators that Leah had talked to them about Jack Kerouac and her plans to go see the mountains. One of the men told police that Leah had left the restaurant with another man who she called Barry. And this man provided a very detailed description of Barry. But the other man that was at the restaurant could not confirm this account. And neither could anyone else that was in the restaurant at the time. So it's kind of weird why this guy said that.
Are you Barry?
Right. Very bizarre. Yeah. But, you know, the other man did say
she was there.
She didn't leave with him. And we know she was there. She ate there. And she was talking to them about her plan. So, like, clearly she was still on this same idea of what she wanted to do.
Okay.
So after this, the state police and the FBI were working together to determine what had happened to Leah. Initially, they were working on the theory that she had been injured in the accident and had wandered off, not knowing who she was. But that still didn't make sense because there wasn't, like, clear indication that anybody had been in the car. But then again, it wasn't 100% determined that she couldn't have been in the car. Like, maybe the way that she was sitting in the car, like, she didn't hit her head or she didn't hit anything that, like, drew blood. So, like, while it was very bizarre that there were no signs of injuries from inside the car, it wasn't 100% like for sure determined that she hadn't been inside.
Okay.
Now, very concerning to her friends was that under one of the floor mats in the car was her mother's engagement ring, which, according to everyone who knew her, she wore constantly and treasured deeply. So her friends told investigators that she never would have taken it off voluntarily. Nicole said, quote, "As long as I've known Leah, she has worn her mother's engagement ring. It was her most prized possession, and when we discovered that the ring had been found in the car, it was definitely, for me, a bad sign." So her friends believe that maybe she had, like, hit her head and didn't remember who she was. And they were like, that's the only explanation we can come up with that would indicate why she would have, like, taken that ring off.
And that's a really good, I mean, that's a really good theory considering everything else. Like, why the money was there, why her most prized possessions were there. Like, it sounds like she just maybe took off with her cat. But even the cat
could have, like, gotten out and run away.
Yeah, definitely. But
yeah, that was kind of what they were going off of. So for 2 weeks after the car was found, extensive searches were done in the area surrounding the crash site. These were done on foot. They included helicopters and scent tracking dogs, but there was no sign of Leah anywhere. Now, about a week after the car was discovered, a man called in a tip saying that he had seen Leah wandering around a gas station in Everett, Washington. So this was not too far from Bellingham. It was closer to Seattle. But this man claimed that Leah seemed disoriented and confused. But after sharing this information, the tipster basically seemed to panic and hung up without identifying himself or giving any further information. So this was really, really bizarre to investigators, but they did say that the tip was considered credible.
Okay.
But unfortunately, it didn't lead anywhere.
And no one else could validate this sighting, I guess.
Right. And after this, Leah's case went cold pretty quickly. Now, there have been several theories over the years that have developed, of course.
Right.
Investigators believe that Leah may have crashed the car when she was heading toward Mount Baker Highway, and then she got out and may have been picked up by a motorist. They believe, as we were just saying, she may have been disoriented because of a head injury from the crash. There's also a theory that she may have been the victim of foul play and that the accident was staged to make it look like she had crashed and gotten hurt.
Oh, yeah.
They also searched all local hospitals to see if there were any reports of a woman coming in that was, like, disoriented and dazed, but there weren't any. Some speculate that she could be living somewhere today with no memory of who she is.
Gosh.
And then some theorize that she willingly left her life to start a new one. But Kara does not believe that, and she said, quote, "I can understand Leah's needing to get away and find some peace within herself. But considering the loss that our families experienced, it's difficult for me to think that she would leave us open for another loss like this."
Yeah, I have to agree there. I mean, I don't know her at all, but I totally think she needed this journey to kind of, like, rediscover herself, figure out, like, what she wants out of life. But I don't feel like she would put her family through that. I don't know. I just, like, willingly and, like, knowingly, like, maybe if she did have a head injury, obviously then she doesn't even know, but.
Right. No, I don't think she left willingly either. In 2001, Leah's case was featured in Unsolved Mysteries, which led to some more tips and sightings coming in, but nothing ever panned out. In 2005, for the fourth anniversary of Leah's disappearance, a cross-country caravan was organized to follow Leah's route from North Carolina to Bellingham. Kara had been working with a woman named Monica Kyson, who had frequently helped families find their missing loved ones after cases went cold. And Monica specializes in keeping cases alive in the media. So to bring awareness for Leah's case during the anniversary, she organized this caravan. And both Monica and Kara appeared on Larry King Live in 2005 to bring even more awareness. But unfortunately, this didn't lead to any more advancements in the case.
That's disappointing.
In 2006, the original detective on the case, Mark Joseph, passed his now cold case files onto two younger detectives, hoping that fresh eyes might see something new. One of the detectives noticed that the car and its contents had never been fully processed for evidence in the original investigation. So they were like, let's finish this processing because maybe we'll find something. Now, part of this was to check the actual, like, mechanics of the car. And when they pulled open the hood, they found that something had happened with the starter motor in the car that basically allowed the car to accelerate without having to hold down the gas pedal. So I actually asked my husband about this because he is a big car guy. Like, he literally rebuilt his entire car engine. And I was like, this doesn't make sense to me. So I need some more information here.
Yeah.
So he explained, and this is in very, like, simple terms, and he's not a car expert. He's not an expert in crashes, but he does know a lot about cars. So he explained that tampering with the starter motor could potentially allow someone to leave the car in gear and activate the starter motor from outside without having to turn the key.
Oh.
So basically, this could get the car rolling. So he said this wouldn't, like,
keep it going.
Right, and it wouldn't activate it enough to get it going that fast, but it would get it rolling. And if they were able to get it rolling down the hill.
Yeah, it could easily gain that speed.
Found at the bottom of, it could easily gain that speed. So
yep,
it could do that without anyone being inside, which would explain why there was no indication of an injury.
Right, and would Leah know how to do that?
So that's the question. Now, this, of course, confirmed the early theory that investigators had that no one had been inside the car. And this led detectives back to the man who was the customer at the restaurant that recalled seeing Leah with the man named Barry.
Barry. Okay.
Now, apparently, they identified this man and he was a mechanic. So he would be somebody who would know how to do this.
Interesting.
They also found that there was a fingerprint under the hood of the car. So they traced this man down, and he had unfortunately moved to Canada between when Leah disappeared and when the detectives were like looking for him. So it took years to actually get his fingerprints to be able to compare. And unfortunately, when they did compare, the fingerprints turned out to not be a match.
Okay. Well, that's good. They could at least, in that aspect, regard, rule him out.
Right. They also, through this, like, re-look at the case, they found that there was trace DNA, or they found trace DNA on an article of Leah's clothing. Now, because this was trace DNA, this was not detectable with the technology back in 2000. Mm. So that's why it wasn't found then. But now, in 2010, they were able to find it, and they were able to identify that this was male DNA.
Okay. I was going to ask, were they, like, did they identify what the DNA was? Like, was it hair, fingerprint, semen? Like, okay.
Yeah, they didn't say. Unfortunately, the latest update about this DNA was in 2011, and it was just to say that they were still waiting to find a match. And as of 2024, there are no further updates on the DNA. But it does seem like there is some DNA and potentially other evidence that was collected that investigators are hopeful may one day lead to a match.
Yeah.
In 2010, it was reported that the case was still ongoing and that police were still asking for help from anyone with information to come forward. So at that point, it was the 10th anniversary, and they were saying, you know, we're still working on this.
Mm, so heartbreaking.
Yeah. Over the years, there have been more searches of the area, including with cadaver dogs. They also used metal detectors because, remember, Leah had that metal rod in her leg. So they were like, you know, had she been buried or like succumbed to the elements or animals, that metal rod would still be there. But yeah, that was never found, and no sign of Leah has ever been seen. And to this day, she remains a missing person.
And the neat thing about when you have hardware in your body like that, there's a like a serial, not a serial number. Is that what it's called? A serial number?
Yeah, a serial number. Yeah.
So, yeah, they have serial numbers. So, yeah, they're traceable. So if they were to ever, you know, come across that, they would be able to. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's basically the case. It does seem like that DNA could potentially lead somewhere one day if she did meet with foul play. But it's just so bizarre because, as we've kind of talked about, there's the fact that the car crashed on its own. So somebody had to have done that.
Right.
Whether, like, it could have been Leah if she figured out how to do that. Like, I asked my husband and he said, you know, like, it's not super simple, but if you watched a couple of, well, this was 2000, so maybe not YouTube videos, but like, if you read a book about it, you might be able to figure it out.
Yeah.
So maybe she had done that, or maybe she had met with foul play and somebody else staged the accident.
Yeah.
There's also the really weird call about the tipster from Everett, who saw her disoriented. Like, why did he hang up so abruptly? Does he know more than he's letting on? But then again, maybe he wasn't being truthful, and so that's why he just hung up.
Yeah.
But it's hard to say.
So many questions and not many answers.
Yeah. Leah Roberts is currently classified as endangered missing. At the time of her disappearance, she had blonde hair and blue eyes and was about 5'6 and 130 pounds. She has a surgical scar on her right hip and a metal rod in her leg. She has pierced ears and dimples. Today, she would be 47 years old. And the case is still active and ongoing, so anyone with any information can contact the Whatcom County Sheriff's Office at 360-676-6650. I don't want to speculate too much because we just don't know. And it is such a bizarre case. And I just feel so much for her family that, you know, she was just going on this trip and wanting to kind of experience life. And clearly something happened, whether it was intentional and she got hurt, which I really don't think it was intentional. If she was inside the car when it crashed and she got hurt, but no, like, blood, and then she was disoriented. If she met with foul play before the car even crashed and then it was staged, it is just so bizarre. There are so many questions in this case, and I feel so much for her family.
I know, after everything they've already been through. I mean, they lost both their parents and now their sister. Like, I mean, you know, they just don't know where she is. So right now it just feels like she's just out there and never. Yeah.
There's no,
like,
closure.
No resolution. Yeah.
Yeah.
So awful.
But yeah, I will share Leah's picture and, you know, share all of this information because this case, you know, it's not closed. And I definitely think there could be answers. Either somebody knows something or that DNA will come back as a match. I mean, we've seen cases in recent years come back with matches and stuff. So you never know. But that is the case of the disappearance of Leah Roberts. I truly hope that one day her family will have answers.
Yeah,
that's all I have for you guys today, though. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, keep it human.
Bye, guys.